Go.
Well, good morning, you guys. I'm very grateful to be here today. I'm an alcoholic. I'm James Oliver. I appreciate being able to participate in the meeting, and I'm very grateful to be sober. I was thinking that I'm going to start this because I was just walking by this thing, and I saw this. This is a joke from the grapevine. This is February 24th. I think we're collecting these to bring to a thing. But it says, caller, is this the helpline for alcoholics? Volunteer. Yes, it is. Caller, how do you make a mojito? That's a pretty good one. When I would first get the grapevine, I would always read the jokes, you know. My first sponsor told me to get the grapevine. And as fate would have it, then I ended up Area 50 grapevine chair. Let's see. My sobriety date is October 18th, 1994. I'm a member of the High Noon Group of AA. We meet every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 12:15 in the Hope Center, which is Maple North Forest for anybody that's in Buffalo. I'm very grateful to be sober. I got into general service because my sponsor, Chuck, who he sent me a text this morning and said he couldn't be on the meeting because he's setting up for a baby shower. And I told him, well, then I'll have to tell the truth because the meeting's also recorded, you know? And he wrote, back, what makes you think you can, with a smiley face. But then I wrote back, it's, unless God is flowing through me, I can just lie reflexively. You see what I mean? And I've been taught that the way that this way of life is best actuated is by me drawing near to God and allowing the power to flow through me. And unless I'm doing that, then I will and can just lie reflexively for no reason at all. Very, very fascinating phenomenon that I've come to know is part of the manifestation of this illness, that I've been gifted with. It is a gift now. If you're new in AA, the one thing I would tell you, I don't even know who's on here, but I've learned that, first of all, Alcoholics Anonymous works 10 out of 10 times. It never fails. It can't fail. It's designed by God for people like us. All I need to do is follow these simple set of directions, and I'm going to be transformed from the pathetic, chronic, lying, degenerate, scumbag, drug addict, alcoholic that I was into somebody who could be of use to, most importantly, the people who are closest to me. And this is the miracle of my life. This is my story. And it turns out then that our illness goes from being an affliction to a gift. And that's the miracle of God that can transform, where it says in the book, cling to the thought that your dark past is your greatest asset, for with it you will help others to recover from misery and even death. And that's the truth. I think it says avert misery. Anyway, it's pretty early. I'm about cup of coffee into this thing, so let's see how all this goes. But Chuck is my sponsor. That's how we got on that topic. I got into general service because my second wife died of cancer, March 24, 2015. Both my two first wives are named Amy, which can be a little confusing. But I was divorced from my first wife, February 7, 2008. I was just about 14 years without a drink, and three police officers showed up at the front door of my house and told me I had 30 minutes to pack. So that's how I knew I was getting a divorce. And I'm very grateful to say that I met my first wife in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had about 6 months at that time. She had a little under 2 years, so I wanted definitely documented that she 13-stepped me. Ah, just kidding. I saw her on a beach in a bikini, and I was like, that one's mine. And so what's fascinating about that is that where the literature says we make decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So you see, what I've learned is that in God's time, when I saw that woman, girl at that time on that beach in that bikini, and my brain said that was that one's mine. At that moment, I made a decision solely and totally based on self, which later placed me in a position to be hurt. So now, in God's time, that is now. You see, in my life, that only appeared to be maybe what, 8, maybe 10 years later, 10, 11 years later, right? In my mind, in my life, chronologically, it was 11 years later, but in God's time, it was now. I wasn't interested in what that girl felt or thought or any of her concerns or cares or who she was as a person or how I could help her. None of that was present in that split second. And it was Chuck that taught me what you have imagined as love is really lust. Started out as lust, which was really anger, which is really fear. Okay. And that was right when I was in his office and he was very nearly, I would say, 2 or 3 weeks into becoming my new sponsor. And I will tell you right now, I tell Chuck, you saved my life. Chuck says, God saved my life. Chuck says, no, God saved your life. No, Chuck was there when, I mean, anything could have happened. So this is the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, that this program immerses us in a power that can carry us through horrifically traumatic situations if we don't drink, press in on God, and just keep following the directions. And this is my experience. So, Chuck's been my sponsor since, 2008. I had a couple before then. And how we got on this topic was, my second wife died of cancer in my arms, March 24, 2015. And I met Chuck at a coffee shop, Tim Hortons, at the corner of Delaware Road and Sheridan Drive here in Buffalo. And I had a list, yellow legal pad. I got my resentments. These are justified resentments. Roswell Park, Amy's Aunt Mary, who was director of nurse anesthesiology at Roswell, right? Some other couple things, some people that, for example, Amy was, passed away then, and my sister-in-law let herself into our house and took a bunch of stuff out of our house, Okay. So I'm sitting there with these justified resentments. I go to the first one, which is Mary. I read it off. She was the one that encouraged us to go to Roswell. This other doctor told us to go to John Hopkins. He stops me. He said, "Hey, hey, wait a minute. Obviously Chuck was at my wedding, so he said, because so he knew Amy and Mary." He said, "So you're telling me," he looks at me and said, "that Mary, who lost her best friend," they were like the glamour girls, they would go to spas and things, best friend, even though it was her niece, they were very close in age, best friends. "So you're telling me that Mary lost her best friend, encouraged her to go to Roswell because she worked there. The treatments didn't work. It wasn't quite congruent, all the treatment care that you were receiving there. You had to go to another place and it didn't work. And now Amy's passed on." He looks at me and says, "Have you prayed for Mary yet?" And I was like, I'm just looking at him. Reaches across the table, gets my legal pad with my resentments on it, goes like this, and says, "You're going to be the GSR for Area 50 for the High Noon Group. I'm here to talk about general service." I'm like, "What's a GSR?" Now think about that. I had been in AA a long time then, almost 20 years, oh, maybe a little over. Never knew what a GSR was, never had been involved in general service, didn't even know. I said, what's a GSR? And he said, Area 50 is dark. You are the GSR of the High Noon Group. You're going to start coming to the general service assemblies. So I was like, okay. We started to talk about general service right then. I said, well, should we vote? Because, I mean, I had been the treasurer of the High Noon Group, and I would go get the literature, this kind of thing. I said, well, should we vote? And he said, no one's going to know what a GSR is. You're the GSR. So I became the GSR of the High Noon Group. I started to go to the general service assemblies. I was GSR for 2 years. I started to get general service active in Area 6 and 7. Turns out, I'm sorry, District 6 and 7. Turns out District 7 is Williamsville, Amherst, and North Cheektowaga. I didn't know that that was even the case. We combined 6 and 7. I ended up then becoming the DCM, which I was speaking up in Canada. A lot of good people in Canada. Totally, like, integrated general service in Canada. Crazy. All their committees are full. You can't even get in the committees. Here, it's not that way yet. But anyway, so the guy from Canada told me, you're going to find out that DCM stands for don't call me. So it's been a journey. And so, you know, this is what I'm trying to share, is that this is how I became the Area 50 Grapevine chair, was that nobody volunteered to do it. And that's how I became Area 50 Grapevine chair. And Bill Wilson said that the grapevine is AA's magic carpet. And now, let's see, okay, I'm on gallery now. Hi, everybody. I can see everybody now. So, but Bill Wilson said that the grapevine is AA's magic carpet. And I want to look, please, everybody, and encourage you to please download the Grapevine app, okay? The Grapevine app is what will fund this thing. So then, after nobody volunteered to be the Area 50 Corrections Chair, I start taking meetings into Alden Correctional, and I'm still doing this. And the thing is that these, I bring as many as I can into the prisons, into this place, you know? Also, I drop some off at the holding center. And this is the only way that the AA in print, aside from the big book, because they're not allowed to have staples and no hardcover books, but this is the only way that Alcoholics Anonymous circulates through the facility, is the Grapevine in print. So please download the Grapevine app. And it's super cool. Like, for example, I'll show you this. Let me see. Where is that? Okay, ready for this one? I don't check this too much, but okay, here we go. Okay, 10, I mean, this is the minor thing that doesn't even, I mean, who cares? 10,904 days sober attracts your 10,904 days sober. It's impossible, but for the grace of God, telling you that. That's like the most least thing it does. You can have access to every grapevine ever printed since 1944. All of the material in there, it's a trove of information, the grapevine. All the contributors. And so, yeah, do the app. Also, my third wife, Molly, she's, I think, sleeping right now. This is a crazy thing. So my first sponsor, John Moran, right? He would always tell me, wherever you are, you get the P.O. Box 4590 to your house. P.O. Box 459 is the quarterly newsletter that is printed out of, AAA home office down in New York City. So I would always get it, no matter what, right? Of course, now, I didn't only live but in two houses pretty much until the divorce started. And then when you get divorced, you might have to move a lot. So I was forwarding, you know, my address all the time. And it would be like this: subpoena, shut off notice, collection notice, collection notice, collection notice, summons, repossession notice, P.O. Box 459. I would see it. My mind would say, okay, I'm in AA. It's okay. I'm in AA. It's going to be all right. Now, I don't really read those. I'm just telling you. Not one of these people would go through like the quarterly newsletter of AA to read about all the finances, this and that. Wasn't my thing. But I would always forward it because John, you know, John Moran, he's my first sponsor. John Moran saved my life. These are the people that God, these are real live guardian angels that God puts into our life that I didn't understand what was even happening when I got to AA. And before he was even my sponsor, one time we're at this meeting, which is the High Noon group, which had about five people in it. And I told him, John, this is stupid. Nobody's going to come here, John. It's me, you, Kenny, John Jr., Bill. No one's here, John. And I tell him, do you realize we have no coffee maker, John? Do you understand, John, that there's no one here to make coffee? And we're standing outside out back of the meeting. He's smoking a cigar and he's looking at me like this. Like I'm like a dumb dog, right? Hello. It turns out I was the coffee maker in that meeting, but I didn't know that. Right. So I made coffee in that meeting every Tuesday and Thursday for 3 years, right? And then it turned out that now, to show you how smart I am, we added Wednesdays, and now we get about 30 to 60 people in that meeting every day. We have a speaker. We're in registered with New York. I've been a member of that group since 1995, since it started. And this is how AA works. Before he's even my sponsor, right? He said, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? So he takes me, you know, so I'm like, yeah, sure. He tells me we would go to ice cream here and there and like, you know, just, you know, nothing. That's about it. We go to ice cream, talk about, you know, AA, you know, small talk. So he takes me, we're standing up behind the meeting. Goes, you know, you talk about like what happened to you, all this New York, Toronto, all these things you're into with these fucking, you know, we don't swear on a recorded thing, but with these drugs, that's what he said. And all this drinking, and even what happened to you, you talk about like this way of life, like it's something glamorous or exciting. Even what brought you in here somehow is somehow exciting to you. And I said, well, you know, John, not every, he goes, just be quiet for a minute. He goes, let's get one thing very clear. There's nothing glamorous or exciting about you or this drinking and drug lifestyle of yours. You're just another pathetic drunk. And he goes, when are you going to grow up? And he like walked away, got in his car and drove away. And I'm like, are we still going to ice cream? I mean, we used to go to Potler's, you know, over on Transit. And I'm thinking, are we like, I never went. I never even knew if he went to ice cream that day. I didn't even ask him. But he showed up on Thursday like nothing even happened, you know? So this was John Moran. He's the guy that told me to get the P.O. Box 459 to my house. So now Molly and I get this house in 2020, right before the pandemic. I, of course, get my mail forwarded here. I was renting a house over on Colden Court in Cheektowaga, 68 Colden Court. Last house on the block, right by the thruway. Beautiful place. My buddy's sister owned it, and they gave me a great deal on it. After Amy died, you know, I was living in the house for a while. They did a benefit for us, Amy and I, and I collected like almost 100K, and we gave it all. I gave it all to Audrey, you know, everything. I have a stepdaughter from that marriage that we still are in contact. She just graduated from high school. Her graduation was not recently a party. And she is going to Geneseo. She goes to Geneseo now. Her name is Audrey. Keep Audrey in yours. Anyway, she had no mom. So gave her whatever came out of that thing. And I then got a house by myself, you know, work with my sons. I have two sons, 24 and 25. James Felix after me, Evan Andrew. Very fine young men. Very fine young men. So far, not alcoholic, as far as I can see, God willing. And the program built those boys. And so then Molly and I I've known Molly since 2009. We've been friends since 2009, which is pretty crazy. And 2018, a little more than friends. Then we got a house in 20, got engaged in 21, and got married. No, got engaged in 19. Yeah, got married in 22. But so now we have this house, right? Molly is like, what's this? I say, that's P.O. Box 459. You know, tell her a little bit about blah, blah, AA. She's like, wow. She actually reads it, right? I get back to the house. She's like, you know, they're looking for Class A non-alcoholic trustees. I'm like, wow, great. She goes, you think I should apply? I said, yeah, go ahead. Now, like, then 3 months later, she tells me, you know, I'm still in consideration for, you know, this position on the board. And I said, okay, honey, what are we talking about? Because she was on another board for, she was chair of Niagara Foundation. And she, what's the other one? Community Foundation. She's ex officio on this other board. She knows boards. Molly is sharp and a good person. That's the main thing. So, but anyway, she tells me for the AA board. She said, you know, I'm still in. I said, wow, my God, it's been like, she said, yeah, it's quite a process there. Short story. She's on the board. She's a Class A non-alcoholic trustee. Can you imagine that? And this is because I listened to my sponsor without even knowing why I'm doing it. And if you're new in AA, let me be clear on one thing, okay? What we're doing here, it doesn't matter what I think about being an alcoholic or how I feel about it. I have an illness that centers in my mind, okay? I cannot always rely on my own thoughts. And it doesn't matter how I feel about it. My emotions change like the weather. And not because I'm alcoholic, okay? I'm not one of these people like, oh, I'm alcoholic, so I, you know. We're human. Our emotions change, okay? So it doesn't matter how I feel about being alcoholic or what I think about this whole thing. If I'm going to survive this, and make no mistake about it, this is a survival game. This is a deadly, fatal illness. And if I don't follow these directions, I'm dead. So what really matters is, what am I going to do about it? Not what do I think about it? Not how do I feel about it? What am I going to do about it? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to follow the directions. So when John Moran told me, you need to get down on your knees and ask God to take the obsession of alcohol and drugs from your life, I'm like, okay, I'll have to give that a try sometime. Thank you. And he goes, right here, right now. I was like, there's people over there. I didn't have like some white light experience. I got up off the grass. The jeans, you know, were wet. You know, the knees of my jeans were wet. I'm like, okay. But you know what? He told me later, I was praying over you. You want to know something crazy? I was on my knees behind this meeting. It was like April in 1995. I remember it. You know, it was just had been warm. You know, the ground was clearly wet. And I'm on my knees and I'm like, okay, God, please take away the obsession of alcohol and drugs from my life. Right in that moment, this thing comes in like, hold on, I can't smoke anymore. John's weed he sent me from California. My buddy John Bornstein, pray for him. He died in the life. He's a beautiful guy. He died down in Florida. He was, before anybody heard in Mendocino County, he was sending, you know. Anyway, so imagine I'm praying to a God. I have no idea who or what that God is. And I'm praying to God for something that in that split second, I wasn't even sure that I wanted to happen. And something happened. I kept praying on my knees. He told me, before you go to bed, you get down on your knees. You thank God if you haven't had a drink that day. You get up in the morning, you ask God to protect you. Something happened. Okay. I was in AA 11 years to show you how smart I am. Before I realized it, I don't have to actually get out of bed to pray on my knees. You can just kneel on the mattress. That took me 11 years to learn that one. When it's, you know, if it's cold, I'm like, oh, I forgot to pray on my knees. Oh, you can just kneel on the mattress. So learning process, very slow learner. And I follow the directions. I follow the directions. So this grapevine thing, the app is important because Mark Kavanaugh, who is the publisher of the grapevine, he's got 35 years. He's a great guy. He busts his ass. Okay. And we were just together not long ago. So I fly along with Molly. Like, I get to like bum around New York while she, let me tell you what, I don't even know what the Class A trustee does. And frankly, I don't want to know. And I was in a restaurant for a long time, 16 years. I started as a busboy, ended up partners with the Cosentino brothers at a very exclusive restaurant over on Genesee Street across from the airport. And, all sorts of people would come in there. And what I learned at a very early young age, even before I was with those guys, was if it's none of my business, it's none of my business. Follow me? So, but I will tell you what I have seen Molly do. She gets up at 7:15 in the morning, leaves our hotel room, and comes back at 11:30 at night. She leaves our hotel room at 8:30 in the morning, and comes back at 10:30 at night. She gets up the next day, leaves our hotel room at 8:30 in the morning, and comes back at 11 o'clock at night. And this goes on for about 4 days in a row. She volunteers her time. She's one of 7 Class A non-alcoholic trustees. And it's a lot what they do. And these trustees that volunteer their time do it because they love Alcoholics Anonymous and they love the people connected to Alcoholics Anonymous. And because Molly's nephew, Ryan, who is my nephew, I took him to meetings. He didn't make it. He did not make it. I met him. I would go pick him up out in Orchard Park, bring him to High Noon, bring him to some other meetings. The last thing he told me was, I got a good job. I'm making almost $40 an hour. And I signed up for outpatient rehab with, the counseling for Verizon. And he said, if I can't stop this way, then I'll go inpatient. And I believe that he took a Xanax that he bought on the street that he thought was a Xanax and it was fentanyl and he's gone. He's in heaven. So we have to understand that if you're sitting in this meeting today, it's because you've been touched by the hand of God. And that is because God reached into this sea of suffering and insanity and hopelessness and said, not you. You get a second chance. And that's why I'm here today. And I don't forget that. A grateful alcoholic can never drink. If you're new, listen closely. A grateful alcoholic will never drink. I've watched a lot of arrogant alcoholics drink. You know that guy. He's like going to get you sober. He's doing the advanced AA. Okay. Okay. I've watched those people drink. I have no power to get you sober or keep you sober. I cannot help you. You are beyond human aid. I have experience I can share with. If you want to listen, listen. If you are listening, that's because of God's grace. I had a lot of answers as to why I didn't need to listen. I went to my first meeting and I was 22 years old. I went there. They passed the basket. I'm like, everyone's giggling, laughing, right? I'm like, what is so funny about this? Everyone's like real happy, joyful, looked like some kind of like weird, I don't even know what. Then they passed the basket. They say like there's like a million alcoholics. This is probably 92, somewhere in there. I came in, I was 26. So yeah, no, that was probably, this is probably what? Maybe not, what, 94? This is probably 90, right? Yeah. So they passed the basket. So now I'm like, okay, I get it. This is like Amway. This is like a multi-level marketing scheme, right? They all pass the basket, right? I get it. Then they all hold hands and pray at the end. I'm like, it's like a cult. Like, okay, I get it. Right. I'm walking across the athletic field laughing to myself. I knew two things for sure. I knew that I'm not an idiot, so I could certainly sign my own slips. It's an anonymous program. Right. And I knew I needed somebody else's urine. Then there was a waiter that worked with me in that restaurant. And so I could get Eve's urine. He was virulently anti-drug. And that's what happened. That's how I got my driver's license back. That was 92. That was after DWI number 2. So, yeah, I don't understand anything about the power of God, really, except for that it's real and he loves me. Chuck Beinauer, Oh my God. I asked God what he wanted me to do today, and he told me to tell you that he loves you and cares about you. And if you ask him for help, he will help you. The 7:30 meeting that was in Chuck's office. Now, I'm not sure where it meets now, but there was like six guys sitting around a table in his law firm. Then it got bigger and bigger, and we would get all the chairs out of everybody's office. So that was a problem because people wanted to come in early. There was no chairs in their office. But we were at this I went to some I went to oh, the Whirly Diner with some guys that we didn't know too well, but they went to the meeting. These are like the arrogant guys that are gonna like sit in the meeting and analyze it. The analyst chair is one seat over from the bar stool, by the way. If you're sitting in a meeting, analyze a meeting of AA, your mind is like this, that. You're like one chair over from the bar stool. Anyway, so we're at this we go end up with the diner with about seven guys, and one of the guys is like making fun of Chuck, And I'm sitting right next to the guy, and my brain is like, get him by the back of the head and smash his face right off of his eggs. And so what I learned is that for me, right, violence, violent thoughts is very closely associated with fear and sadness. And I was sad. I was still like coming right up out of my divorce. And this guy was frustrating me. So I know that violence and anger are very closely connected to me to fear and sadness. And so I was probably frustrated and a little sad that this guy was talking about Chuck in this manner. And then, of course, anger is not far from that. So I just prayed for him because that's what you do. Just look at, right? I'm like thinking, really? And then I just start praying. So we must pray all the time. This is where, right? Page 86, Chuck, read page 86, 87, and 88 every day. Now, I'll tell you, I was 13 years without a drink, as I said. Cops showed up, told me I had 30 minutes to pack. And I start reading page 86, 87, and 88 every morning, like my life depended on it, because it did. Every morning. I could recite it to you now. I don't have to open the book. Sometimes I pray on my knees and I go right through 86, 87, and 88. It's all there. When agitated or doubtful, pause. When agitated or doubtful, pause. The instructions are all in the book. It says, we're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities, humbly saying to ourselves each day, many times, thy will be done, thy will. What is a reprieve? Turns out we look it up. It's a delay or forestallment of impending execution or doom. Woo! I'm living my reprieve today. I don't know about you. I'm grateful. That's why I know grateful alcoholic will never drink. Even all the stuff that was going on, there was always something to be grateful for. Always something to be grateful for. Always. So this. Oh, okay. Listen, Jim, when it's time to shut up, just be like, hey, man. So,
You got it, brother. You're doing great. Keep going. I'll put a timer up in a couple of minutes for you. 10-minute timer.
thanks, man. Good morning, you guys. It's a little still early, but I'm so thankful to be in the meeting with everyone and know that I'm not alone. See, this is the beautiful thing of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? What's happening right now is what actually happened with Bill and Bob. These two guys got together, and you could go on Amazon, watch Bill's talk. It's him in black and white, and he talks and he says, and something passed between us. That's what's happening here. Something's passing between us. We know that if we stick together, right, that we can serve each other and that there might be a way out of this, that there's hope here. That's the one thing that Alcoholics Anonymous really is so, what I would call abundant in the hope. And I always say when I'm in a meeting, this is my front row seat. and I'm in Miracle Stadium because it is a miracle factory, man. I am in a miracle. Should be dead or in prison or in a mental institution. So, you know, second meeting was, so the first one was because I go to this class to get my driver's license back, ECC. The doctor, not, it wasn't a doctor, it was a proctor. He says, take your watch off, put it on the bar, order a drink, and then 1 hour you can have another drink, and in this way you'll never have another alcohol-related offense. So I turn to this guy and I say something, you know. He starts laughing. The guy said, what do you say that's so funny? I said, I mean, I wasn't trying to be funny. I was just simply saying, you know, 55 minutes would be a long time to wait for a drink. And some people in the class laughed. And then the next thing I know, I get referred to drug testing. And that's when, and AA. So then that's when then I had to start going to these meetings. And so I'm walking across that athletic field, laughing at that experience I just had. There's a guy that died sober, Scott Strachan. He said, a lot of years, maybe 40 plus. He said, if from the time that I went to my first meeting until the time that I stayed in AA could have flashed before my eyes, if what was going to happen would have flashed before my eyes, I would have killed myself after that first meeting. And that's my experience. If I could have seen what alcoholism was going to do in my life, I would have laid down in Young's Road and let a bus run my head over. I had no idea what the desolation of alcoholism, what it was going to do. Because I was 13 years without a drink, and I was really, not surprisingly, you know, suffering from some symptoms of untreated alcoholism. It's got nothing to do with not drinking. I don't want to discourage anybody about that. I'm not here to not drink, okay? Alcohol, that's a symptom of a much greater, much deeper emotional personality disorder. Literature tells me I can't endure the suggestion. In fact, I'm mentally ill. And I need to have a relationship with a power. I draw near to this power. This power flows through me and infuses me with a sense of peace and grace and safety and warmth and unconditional love. And of course, wrapped in there is forgiveness. This then comforts me and lets me know that I don't need to be afraid. I don't need to manage my own life. Chuck and Dave were with me outside of a meeting on Elmwood near Lafayette on a Thursday morning. They were standing right next to each other. And Dave said, how are you? I said, I don't know. This is when all this was going on. And he goes, you look okay. And I said, thanks. And he said, what are you thinking about? And I looked at him. I said, C covers B and A. And Dave looked at me and said, I was in AA almost 20 years before I knew that. C covers B and A. C, God could and would if he were sought. God could and would what? Relieve my alcoholism. Not the drink. Of course, the drink, but the symptoms of alcoholism. And A, what's A? If I seek God, he will manage my life. Am I able and willing to surrender the management of my life over to God? No, not without divine intervention, not without being confronted and suffering from the symptoms of me trying to manage my own life. That's what I'm here to be treated for. And just as I have repeated so many years from 13, and if you're new, the one thing I do want to tell you is there's no such thing as a 13-year-old social drinker. I learned that in AA, okay? No such thing as a 13, 14-year-old social drinker. So, but just as I tried to repeat the desperate experiment of the first drink, for all those years since the time I started drinking, I will repeat the desperate experiment of trying to run my own life and trying to manage my own thinking until I'm brought to the end of it. This is the miracle of my story, that I'm here now, safe and sober, and connected to a God of my I mean, understanding my a God that I'm in awe of. I'm connected to a God who loves me that I'm in awe of. I go to church. The other thing I would say, oh, 6 minutes. Wow, 6:51. So, but watch this. What they don't want us to do is sit in a meeting of lunatics, right? I'm sitting in a meeting of, which is like the day room of a mental institution, okay? You're in a meeting of AA. That's like the day room of a mental institution, okay? Listen to what the lunatics imagine their God is, and then me derive my concept of God based on what the lunatics imagine their God is. That's like plan Z, okay? What does the literature tell me to do? Be quick to see where religious people are right and make use of what they offer. What does that mean? It means exactly what it says. Contemplative prayer and meditation, laudatory prayer, books like Power of Positive Thinking by Norman Vincent Peale, books like that are written by Henry James and Fulton Arzler, books like Emmett Fox's, all of Emmett Fox's literature. This is where we learn what a God is. This is Gloria right here. She's trying to like get me off of this thing. And there's Cecilia over there. These are the girls. Yeah, they're good. So this is a life that God can construct. If I surrender my will and my life over to the care of God, He will construct a life that is beyond my diseased brain's ability to even comprehend. Let Him do it. This is what we do here. So as a result of Amy dying, second Amy, I find myself in the Adoration Chapel at St. Greg's, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. There's a thing called Eucharistic Adoration. You sign up on a thing, you go there in the middle of the night. Does it make any sense? It's not supposed to make sense. We live by faith, right? Anyway, I go there. In the middle of the night, it's about 2:30 in the morning. I'm on my knees, you know, firing off a rosary. That's a whole nother story how all that happened. Anyway, I get real quiet and I'm like, Lord, if I know that diligent attention to my prayer life, my life of meditation, and this way of life with you, if I know that produces miracles throughout the day that are undeniable miracles of your presence in my life, and I know that this sense of peace and ease and comfort is breathtaking, it's indescribable, why don't I do it diligently? Why don't I just keep up with it? Why do I let myself stray away and become victimized by my own erratic emotions and have all these different thoughts come into my life? Why do I just not do it if I know that it works? And in the silence of this place, me and just God, this is exactly what came through. Because you're lazy, you're stupid, and you're arrogant. And I was like, woo, wow, okay then. Thank you for that. So what I need to know is that my self can still come in the way of this. And what did the literature tell me? Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. The problem arises out of ourselves. And this is the greatest hope statement that is in that book, that the problem arises out of ourselves. Because if the problem is my ex-wife or Roswell Park or whatever else, then I am doomed. But no, the problem is out of myself. And this is where then all the old timers, Polish Richard had 40 years when I got to AA. He would say, I'm the alcoholic. I'm the problem. The problem is me. I wake up in the morning. I go to bed at night. In between, I'm there. I'm the alcoholic. The problem is me. And my diseased brain would be like, this guy's been here 40 years and he's still the problem. See, try to teach me, you know? So, that's what it is. The presence of God is the absence of me. Okay. So now do I really, so the 12 steps, right? The 12 steps are not a method for me to go through the 12 steps and then manage my life. No, the 12 steps are a way to, for me to go through these 12 steps and then surrender my life to God. And then that's a completely different life. This is a very powerful idea that I have to think about. Anyway, it's too, I mean, there's a couple more things on my mind, but that's probably enough out of me, you know, for now. Just want to thank everybody for letting me be here and all of us together. Oh, the one thing I would say, which is super important, Bob Seeley, right? Died with over 60 years of continuous sobriety. Looked at me and said, James, if you and I don't drink today, we are tied for first. It's a one day at a time way of life. We don't take a drink a day at a time. Very important that we understand that. We're in today, we're in now without a drink. This is important. And then the other guy is Fritz, Korean War hero, used to stand outside smoking cigarettes in his shorts in a blizzard connected to oxygen. He said, now you quit drinking, you feel everything better, huh? You fear anger, fear, loneliness. Go on, get in there. So we're going to feel things, and we're meant to feel things. It's not that I'm not supposed to feel things. It's that I'm supposed to feel everything, but God and I can go through anything together and feel everything together. And this is where we can embrace things that happen for us that appear to be unexpected or uncomfortable or no, it's God and us together. And that's the miracle of it, you know? So that's it. Thank you all.